Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and on the other line is my colleague at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Jim Ozarski. Shout out to those of you listening on 97.3 The Game in Milwaukee on Monday night, or in the usual podcast platform location, Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on Tuesday morning. Thanks for finding us. And Jim, we've got a little bit to talk about. Last week was far more exciting than the, or 2 weeks ago, I should say, a lot more exciting than this past week in terms of competition and everything for the Milwaukee Bucks. But there is one piece of major good news, and that is the return of Brook Lopez. The affable big man is back and expected to play. As we record this on Monday, he's expected to play Monday night against in Salt Lake City against the Jazz, the Utah Jazz. That is where you are, Jim. And George Hill is scheduled to be back as well. For once, the Milwaukee Bucks can say that they are a healthy team. We could talk a little about the DeAndre Bembry injury, but for the most part, this is now a healthy team. I know that you didn't get it. I know you were hoping to talk to Brook Lopez before practice or shortly after practice on Monday, and it didn't quite work out. But I know this has got to make everybody really, really happy, right, Jim?
Yeah. We had hoped he would talk with us after shoot around and just make things a little easier. But he elected to speak post game. But yeah, Mike Budenholzer, who rarely expresses much emotions one way or another, clearly very happy to know that his defensive linchpin is back. And look, I think Brook's offensive contributions have also gone overlooked. I know last year, JR, during the championship run in the playoffs, like we just spoke about how important it was that he sort of turned back into Brooklyn Brook, right? And offered this sort of paint presence. So yeah, we'll see. We don't know what any minutes will be like and all of that stuff. But I think in general though, JR, the fact that he is back with a month left, right? 15 games, 14 games, probably best case scenario in terms of his return. Maybe a hair early. I think maybe there was a thought it would be that the two home games against Chicago, Washington, but regardless, to have him back and George Hill even, I think George Hill's been out since the end of January, JR, with this sort of mysterious neck soreness. They've been hurting a little bit, right? With backup ball handling and things. So, yeah, I think it is a good day. Regardless of outcome or initial production, this is what the Bucks want as they get ready to defend a title, in mid-April.
Do you have any greater sense of what these injuries entailed, especially with George Hill, it's easy to look at it and say, well, they knew that they're probably going to be the playoffs and they do have a veteran roster. And certainly George Hill is among the older veterans on the team. So we're just going to take it completely easy. And, Brook Lopez required surgery. So nobody was just, no one was just taking it easy with that injury. I'm sure it was a big deal, but it's interesting that, when it happened, it wasn't like it happened in a game. It just sort of kind of just popped up after that season opener against the Brooklyn Nets. And then it just morphed into almost a season ending injury. I mean, that's pretty close to what this is. It would be considered catastrophic if we knew then that he'd be missing months out of the season. So do you have any sense of, did something sneak up on them? Do we have any framework for what actually went wrong?
For Lopez, for our understanding, like when we talked to him in Phoenix, Jared, it was just, I think, a gradual issue, like a bulging disc in your back is just, that thing is sort of starting to pop out between your spine, right? And I think for him, it was probably something he was just always dealing with. And then whatever happened on the flight or after, Brooklyn to Miami back in October, clearly was to the point he couldn't play. And then it was, can you manage it? And I think that was the timeline with that. It was like, okay, give him a month and a half. Can you manage the pain? Can it somehow, it's not like a disc is going to go back to where it was. Like, that's not how it works. So I think finally that's what happened there. And so post-op, look, he's 7 feet tall, 280 pounds. I think it was always about how is he going to feel and respond? Because that's not like It's not like Pat Connaughton's broken finger, right? Like where you can say, oh, okay, it's set. Here's an image. It's healed, right? Like I think that was just, and that also goes into the George Hill neck soreness thing. We're going to have to talk to George. You know, he's the one that's going to have to tell us what he felt or what that was, because that's the same thing. It was back in, you know, late January, all of a sudden it's neck soreness and there was no moment in a game or whatever where it was like, oh, like they didn't call it a pinched nerve. Maybe if we speak to him, he'll say there was a nerve. I don't know. So you're right. They're fairly mysterious. Yeah, Brooke was listed with back soreness for a while, so I don't know what neck soreness is. I mean, there's nerves and discs and spinal stuff. I mean, right? So who knows? But what Bud Boonholzer said after the shoot around in Utah was the thing with George was, like Brooke, more time was better to get him where he needed them to be. And I think they're going to lean on him. I think, you know, he's back to sort of build himself up conditioning wise, and they do need that guy. They've been missing the backup point guard. You know, Giannis and Chris have handled a lot of that for a long time. And JR, you know, I mean, you Bucks fans have seen it. You know, the turnovers aren't great. I mean, they kind of just getting those guys off the ball a little bit more will be good for the Bucks.
Yeah, the Bucks without Connaughton and losing DiVincenzo, they were definitely shorthanded in that area. And honestly, it kind of feels like it's going to work out for the best, because here are the Bucks in the standings, still, you know, still within striking distance of the top spot, top three right now. If the season ended today, they'd probably be paired up with the Cavaliers, the 3-6 matchup, which is not a matchup I'm excited about. But, you know, they were able to get this far and still be in the conversation for the top spot. And now they seem to have like just a perfect amount of time before the playoffs kick in to get two of their more veteran players back into the flow. So it feels like it couldn't have worked out any better if you had to deal with it, that this is how you kind of want it to play out. How do things change with Brook Lopez on the floor versus what we've seen to this point? You know, whose minutes are about to evaporate? You know, do we expect to see them work him the way as Brooklyn Brook that he did late last year? Or do you think he goes back to more of a perimeter game? Like what do you think this team needs that Brook's going to provide?
A great question. I think, based on precedent, you know, Drew Holiday came off the bench a few times with injury. So I can see Brooke being, you know, not inserted into the starting lineup immediately. Like I can see them as still part of the process, right? So coming off the bench to spell Bobby Portis or Giannis. And I think initially, JR, it's more about that defensive part of it. We haven't seen, look, that maybe they'll play some drop defense with Giannis, but he doesn't like that. That's not his strength. Bobby Portis definitely doesn't like doing it. So I could see, especially against, you know, starting with that Utah game where you've got a traditional center in Rudy Gobert, you know, where really you look and you find the Mike Budenholzer staple of drop defense, Giannis as your, you know, but your big helper. And that's the thing you see first. Offensively is interesting. You would think it might take him a little while to get a shot down with readjusting the game speed and NBA speed and NBA size and just all that stuff. I mean, it's been October, November, December. I mean, we're talking a handful of months here. But I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Splash Mountain returns and you know, in the shadow of the Rockies, he hits 5 threes and that floor spacer is back. But I think, yeah, JR, I like that idea of, okay, Bobby Portis has sort of established himself. Is that the right word? Like in 2 years is like a 42% three-point shooter. Like, I don't know if they need the floor spacing big. But definitely defensively. And I think, JR, the interesting thing is, what does Mike Budenholzer do with Serge Ibaka? I mean, four bigs, they don't really – do that. Do they play three bigs at once? Is it Ibaka and Brook? And then you give Brook a little bit of a breather defensively or do you think, you know, Serge can move a little bit? So Brook is kind of anchored in the middle and Serge, I don't know. That to me is going to be the really interesting thing, is how they choose to to prepare themselves and experiment in a 2-week period, or, you know, a month long period.
Yeah, because I think Occam's razor would tell you, as Brook works his minutes load up, Ibaka's will disappear, right? It'll just be a simple push and pull. Ibaka won't be used as much. He'll be the backup. He'll be a guy who plays when Brook takes days off. I'm sure there'll be some of those. But, you know, they gave up resources to get Serge Ibaka. Like, they, I'm sure, at that point envisioned internally that Lopez would have been, he's on his way to healing at that point. He's probably going to be back. So they envisioned this scenario that Brook Lopez would in fact be available. I think some people thought when they got Ibaka, it was more of an indictment of where they were with Brook Lopez, and probably felt like maybe he's not coming back and they have to, you know, guard against that. So I agree with you that that's interesting, because I got to think they wouldn't expect to have Serge Ibaka spending the majority of the game on the bench if it meant giving up, you know, Dante DiVincenzo. Like, that's not a trade you make, right?
No, I definitely think this next month is going to be interesting, JR. Like, it's a closing. It's so funny because this is closing stretch, right? They want to play well. They want to win the most of their games. I mean, look, they're just coming off a 6-game winning streak. And yet now they're going to experiment a little bit. And JR, look, you mentioned that first round series with Cleveland. I mean, that's why Serge Ibaka is here, is Joel Embiid and the Cleveland Cavaliers, and right? Like, I mean, those are big teams. And you know, even to a degree, the way Toronto and Miami play, I mean, their guys aren't tall, but they play big. Yeah, that's why he's here. And yeah, maybe it was some insurance to a degree. Like, you don't know. And look, as we record this, we still don't know what Brook's going to look like, right? I mean, you know, he could maybe be a dude who's, you know, worst case scenario, can only play 15 minutes. I don't know. We don't know. And so that's part of this too. So I think, yeah, I don't know if you moved Dante and all of that for one series in the playoffs, but maybe they did. I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe it is about a certain matchup down the line, but if they win a title or get back to the finals, JR, I'm sure it'll be deemed worth it.
So DeAndre Bembry, we barely knew you, unfortunately, just an awful situation where he tore knee ligaments. He's going to be done for the year. The Bucks weren't going to give him a ton of minutes in any scenario, but he was out. He was signed with some defensive abilities in mind. He's been part of the reason this team's been able to hold down the fort defensively with some of its main guys out. I don't imagine the Bucks are going to miss a beat, especially given that they're bringing these guys back, but you know, it's still, you never want to see a guy go out with that kind of injury. Is it, am I understating it? Is it possible that ends up being a bigger deal than anyone realizes?
It's a great question. I think if George Hill is totally back, that helps. Now, he's not as big as DeAndre. DeAndre's a bigger guy and was probably that the idea of your bigger wing defender, JR, I don't know. That was clearly I don't know if the team even knew if he was going to play a huge role come playoffs. Like when he was signed, same thing with Javon Parker, we talked about, right? Or excuse me, not Javon Parker.
Javon Carter.
It was, yeah. We knew we would see Bembry and Javon more in the regular season, right? With all these other injuries, and just these guys are going to play out the string of the regular season, and then playoffs were TBD. It is unfortunate. That you don't even know now, but we'll see. I mean, look, some of these matchups, Boston's got wings, Miami's got wings, Philadelphia, Tyrese Maxey, like, what are you doing out there? Who's handling him? Like, Chris Middleton, JR, I'm at this point, we can say is probably better off. He can defend. Like, we saw that Bulls game, right? He handled DeMar DeRozan. He took his times with Zach LaVine, but I don't know for this team to be at its best, you want Chris having to defend as hard and as often as you need him to score. And maybe DeAndre was going to be that guy who gave Chris a little bit of freedom, you know, but we don't know that, right? We don't know. So that's to be determined. We'll see down the line if you're like, oh, they really could have used that 6'6 dude, you know? So that it is unfortunate in that way. I mean, they thought enough of him to essentially take a $6 million tax bill to sign him. So that's no small decision. But yeah, so, you know, and I don't, and now JR, look, the deadline's passed. There's no, I mean, just so fans know, like, they can't sign a guy that's going to help. That there's no playoff roster addition here. So that's the other part of that.
The Bucks, I said that they were in third, technically tied for second, although the 76ers have a slight leg up in the win percentage category. If the like I said, the season ends today, that puts them against the Cavaliers. The Nets are lurking. They've won three straight. Can't count out the Raptors right now in the seventh seed, a game behind the Cavs, as a team that the Bucks could wind up facing in the first round. I believe also the Hawks now, I think, are kind of in that mix too. They're in the top 10 as well. So this is a... You know, as we get closer, we're going to want to try to figure out how the Bucks match up with these teams. And they could still easily pull into the two slot and wind up facing a play-in team. But and they could still surpass the Heat. We've talked about this before, looking at these matchups. If any team in particular is scary, I'm still concerned about the size of Cleveland, although they're without Jared Allen here. The Nets obviously are a concern for anybody. They aren't playing, you know, it's not like they're up until recently. It's not like they're... You know, they're not racking up a ton of wins, but Kevin Durant is back, and you know, obviously seems like a sleeping giant to me. What as you look at this cluster here of teams, any team in particular now at this point in the season that you're like, you really don't want to see the Bucks faced with that team in the first round?
No, I think the East as a whole is tough. There's not a easy out at this point. I think if you're the Bucks, getting to the two spot would be beneficial because I believe those are playing, like you're waiting for a play-in team. And I don't really believe in like momentum, like the wild, like in football, JR, like, oh, the wild card team won. And now like they got momentum and they're hot.
Just like, a bunch of nonsense, like, momentum. There's no correlation.
The best team usually like 99% of the time wins the series if everybody's healthy. So if I'm the Bucks, even if it's Brooklyn or Toronto, like that team had to scrap its way into the playoffs or whatever, however you want to phrase that, into their regular season. Then they had to travel and play playoff type games while you're sitting at home getting rested and healthy, and you got home court. Like, I just feel like the two seed is better than the three in that sense. Does that make sense? Like, regardless of who it is, like, yes. Do you want to see like Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and Ben? Like, on paper, no. But the Bucks aren't afraid of Brooklyn. The Bucks aren't afraid of the Nets. You know, Kevin Durant's a problem, but like, they stomped on the Nets in the two games. Like, yeah, Kyrie went off in that game coming out of the break and whatever. But I just feel that the history of that shows, like, the Bucks are not afraid of Brooklyn. You know, Toronto, now that's a problem, right? but, like, if it's Atlanta or Charlotte, like, that little play-in thing could be its own issue with, like, a short series or game or whatever it may be. I think if you're a two, I don't know. To me, that feels like a better scenario than anything else.
Yeah, if you subscribe to the idea, well, you don't want to be tested too hard in the first round because you want to save some of those bullets for the later rounds. I don't know offhand if there's any correlation to that either. There may not be, but certainly the Bucks with a first round sweep last year prepared them, gave them a little bit of rest for what was to come, which is obviously a very rugged road through the following three series. But yeah, I don't know if that matters. I also would pick the Bucks over any of those teams, even the Raptors. I'd pick the Bucks to win that series for sure. But I don't know. It's just different, you know. You're so used to the last few years. You see those first round matchups. It's like, well, maybe this team can get a game or two games. You know, it's not a question of whether or not they would win. This is just a really stacked conference this year, and even a team like the Hawks that has underachieved, or I mean, even the Hornets, two games under 500, like that's not a cinch. So it's going to be interesting. I'll be looking forward to these playoffs. There's a lot to look forward to. The Bucks kind of have a little bit of a respite in the schedule. This Monday night game that we're recording before against the Jazz will certainly be compelling. But really, then they don't have any marquee matchups, I would say. Although I shouldn't count out another matchup with the Bulls at Pfizer Forum on March 22nd. But then it's Wizards before you get to a really tough corridor. Grizzlies, 76ers, Nets, followed by Clippers, Mavericks. Those are going to be some really interesting games. Bulls again after that. So the schedule once again is going to pick up pretty well. They did have this pretty high marquee matchup against the Golden State Warriors. Snapped their six-game winning streak. They lose lose 122-109 on national TV. No shame losing to that team, especially you know, when Steph Curry's doing his usual thing. But Steph Curry wasn't doing his usual thing. This was Klay Thompson and Milwaukee's own Jordan Poole on fire. 30 points in 35 minutes, 5 assists, 6 rebounds. He's a guy at Michigan, came out, I think, probably before he was ready to make a major impact, but is certainly on a path toward a very incredible NBA career. Obviously, Kevon Looney is on this team. He's another Milwaukee guy. He also started, has always been kind of more of a defensive guy, but he's a big part of what the Warriors are trying to do. This would be a fun finals matchup, Jim. I mean, obviously, the Warriors are fun in any context, but I would be really intrigued to see where that goes if somehow those two teams got locked up into 7 games. I think it would be a really entertaining series.
Oh, for sure. I mean, especially since Klay Thompson is back, and at that point, Draymond Green would be back, and you have sort of the Splash Brothers and sort of the I guess you'd call it the tail end or a rebirth of a new, you know, potential run in Golden State and look, I root for me, and look, spending a week in San Francisco or the Bay Area, I'd be all right.
It's a good time.
I'd be all right with that.
Indeed, it is a good time, a good place. So that was their only loss last week. They did win a couple games in a row that they were supposed to win, Thunder Hawks, and Giannis played in both of them. And not only did he play in both of them, he played hard in both of them, had pretty high point totals, brought up his projected breaking the franchise scoring mark, brought it up a game to I believe March 29th from March 31st later this month. So Bucks fans can be looking forward to that. But Giannis playing in back-to-back games, I don't know if we expected that. There isn't another back-to-back on the schedule. And if we thought that the Bucks would be resting Giannis for the postseason, especially where they are in the standings, still fighting for position a little bit, I'm not sure Giannis is going to rest again. And you know, maybe that's just the player's wish. Maybe that's just realizing the urgency of where they are in the season. Only, I think, 13 games left as we talk, or something in that neighborhood, maybe 14. So I don't know. Did that catch you off guard, Jim, or is that kind of what you expect now here going forward with the Bucks?
It didn't catch me off guard. The back-to-back for sure is the thing you look for, but you know, that in Oklahoma City, you know, they had played 28 minutes. And so, you know, when there's been that kind of front end where the starters or the big three play less than 30 minutes, and maybe it's not as, you know, Giannis put to the line, he took some pounding in OKC, but that definitely sort of, to me, offers a little bit of a predictor. To me, unless there's a legit, you know, not to say that, look, these guys are always sore, so I'm trying not to minimize, you know, pain. But to me, yeah, look, they don't have any more back-to-backs. They do play every other day for this basically stretch after a couple of days off in Sacramento. So, yeah, I could see, you know, a game popping up here where you know, any of the big three need a day. But I also see them wanting to play. Look, you mentioned the schedule, JR. I mean, you really want to sit for Memphis or Philadelphia or Brooklyn or the Bulls or Boston at this point, and lose a game, and now your things have changed for your seeding or what you feel is important for you. So yeah, I could see Giannis making the run here, see if he can, you know, lock up a third MVP and his first scoring title.
Yeah, once you start with the Grizzlies there on March 26th, every game of the last, what is it, 9 games is interesting, except for the penultimate game of the season against Detroit, which might be interesting based on where they are in the standings. But every opponent is a compelling matchup. Many [S2] Right. [S1] Of them Eastern Conference foes. So this is not going to end with a yawn for Bucks fans. There's a lot of interest here coming down the home stretch. And the playoffs to follow here in mid-April. All right, Jim, that should wrap it for now. Again, we don't know if the Bucks, we don't know the outcome of the Bucks-Jazz game as we speak, but they'll be back in action on Wednesday night against the Kings and Saturday in Minnesota to face the Timberwolves. Let's move on to our features every week. We're going to start with One Quick Buck.
Desmond Mason with authority. Man. Monte Ellis puts it up at the buzzer and goes. got it.
No way.
Monte Ellis wins the game and then heads to the locker room.
You got to be kidding me. Charlie Villanueva. He has got the mojo going.
To the mailman, in your face, Brad Lohan.
The Milwaukee Bucks select Larry Sanders from Virginia Commonwealth University. Larry is not here.
One quick buck.
All right, Jim. So I know we had somebody suggest Fred Roberts. I'm not going to do Fred Roberts, if that's all right with you, because I wanted to do something a little bit more related to the NCAA tournament. So in that vein, I went with a different Roberts. I went with a former Milwaukee Bucks guard, Chris Douglas Roberts, a former Memphis Tiger, college basketball star in Memphis, played in the national championship game. When I say Chris Douglas Roberts, what do you think?
I actually wrote his name down because he is one of over 100 different Bucks players to have lost a game in Utah.
Is that right? You wrote all 100 names down?
Yeah. I wanted to see, people are going to listen to this after the Bucks have either won or lost in Utah, but they had lost 19 straight years. So I wanted to see how many Bucks gave it a shot, and he's one of them.
Yes, it is.
That's what comes to mind. I don't know him otherwise than that.
It's a house of horrors in Salt Lake City for the Milwaukee Bucks. But primarily because, of course, March Madness going on right now, the NCAA tournament. Every year I do a player draft with my friends where we draft 10 guys in the NCAA tournament. Most points wins at the end of the tournament. And in this year, it was 2008, I drafted Chris Douglas Roberts with my first overall pick. He was the highest scoring player in the NCAA tournament. I was very proud of that, even though this was really the NCAA tournament with Davidson. That's the year they beat Wisconsin. You go to the Elite Eight, but Chris Douglas Roberts had a couple more games than Steph Curry, got to the national championship game, and was the leading scorer. I did very bad in that draft, but for some reason I remember that I had CDR and was proud of it. That's the national championship game that ends in overtime. Memphis can't make free throws. Mario Chalmers with the shot. That ends up sending it to overtime, where Kansas prevails 75-68. Memphis got into some NCAA trouble, and I think I had to vacate that anyway. But he comes out after his junior season. He's the second round pick of the Brooklyn Nets in the 2008 NBA draft, 40th pick overall. He then is traded to the Bucks in 2010. He played just the one season in Milwaukee. Was traded for a future second round draft pick. Played 44 games, 7.3 points, 2 rebounds, not huge. The Bucks went 35-47 that year, a roster loaded with one quick buck potential. Corey Maggette's on that team, Drew Gooden, Earl Boykins, Brandon Jennings is the leading scorer. Larry Sanders is a rookie, Keon Dueling, John Brockman. It's a who's who of one quick bucks. And this is the year after the Fear the Deer season in 2010, where they improbably took the Hawks to 7 games. CDR, who was traded, got into some trouble because he had tweeted. Athletes getting in trouble tweeting is definitely something I enjoy talking about. He had tweeted an excited post with FTD over and over. This was before it was official, so he was hinting that he was on his way to the Bucks with Fear the Deer. But he was kind of being cryptic about it, like FTD, people will know what I mean, that sort of thing. And then I guess Nets people were not too thrilled with that because the deal hadn't gone through yet. But anyway, he was there. He ends up spending some time in Italy. Didn't spend a ton of time in the NBA. He actually tore his retina before in the preseason with the Bucks. So he wore goggles. I think if people picture him and know what he looks like, he's wearing goggles. He had cryotherapy actually for the retina. Sounds really bad, unfortunately. He had a really good game against his old team, the Nets. Scored 24 points on his birthday, 9 of 14 shooting. He said afterwards, "I'm not hiding it at all. I really wanted to beat these guys like we beat them," which I can appreciate. I love it when an athlete just comes out and says that, beating an old team. But he was gone. Didn't leave a huge legacy. He in that NCAA tournament, he did beat future Bucks DJ Augustine and Luke Richard Mbamute to get to the championship game. So lots of random connections, I suppose. But that is it. That's all I got. Chris Douglas Roberts, one quick buck. All right, Jim. Let's move to the final segment here of every episode of the Point Forward podcast. It is, as always, what's making Jim mad?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I am very disappointed.
I'm upset.
Louder! I'm upset! Say it louder!
I'm upset!
That's my secret, Cat.
I'm always angry.
What's making Jim mad?
Yeah, so I had one ready. It was along the line, because, you know, I'm angry all the time. You know, it was along the lines of a previous rant of the people who FaceTime, you know, and hold their phone up to their ear so I could see who they're talking to from behind them. So it was along those lines, but no, it changed, JR, this morning as we record this. And I am walking around downtown Salt Lake City, and I don't understand how a city, now granted, this was just a handful of places, run out of coffee. Like, Justin Bieber was in town. There was some, like, youth volleyball thing in town. Maybe some dance moms were in town. I don't know. But, so it's like, stuff was happening here in Salt Lake City before Buck Shaz. But how do you go to a coffee shop that says on the window, opens later, sold out over the weekend? Like, what does that even mean? And then, like, okay, so then you're like, all right, these coffee shops, where's the coffee? I don't know. All right, so let me go to my, so I go back to my hotel, JR's hotel. How does the hotel have no coffee? Like, I'm beside myself, because first of all, I'm an addict. So I'm having some headaches. I'm in a cranky mood anyway.
Oh, no, Jim.
Without my caffeine, right? But I don't understand how you can, how, like, I can go through several downtown coffee shops and run out. Now, look, hey, listeners right now, hey, supply chain. I get it. Look, I understand. But I just feel like, I just feel like it seems improbable to me that several multiple places would not have coffee.
Let me ask you this. Now, I am not a Mormon, nor do I know many Mormons in my life, so I don't know exactly how this works, but I believe coffee is prohibited in the Mormon faith, and we know Salt Lake City is heavily, you know, primarily many people who are native to there are of the Mormon faith. Does that have something to do with it? Is coffee not, like, is there just not a lot of coffee to begin with in Salt Lake City?
Yeah, you know what? That's a good question. It's possible. There were a lot of believers in town.
Sure.
Over the weekend. I mean, he sold out Vivint Arena and whatever other, like, competitions are happening. I mean, these folks all came into Salt Lake City. They are not, you know,
sure.
Not all. So maybe, yeah, that, you know what? That is a good point. That's not my concern.
Well, and furthermore, you're in a hotel. By very nature, the people there are not from the area, so it stands to reason.
So, look, I am accepting and understanding of any and all, but that's not my problem. You know, my problem was there's no coffee in Salt Lake City.
Oh, Jim, I feel that.
I'm not in a great mood. I mean, people who are following me, as they hear this, they might see some pretty, you know, crappy tweets, because I need to express that in some way.
Oh, that's good stuff. Yes, I would also be lost without my caffeinated beverages. As you know, I'm not a coffee person at all. I've had one sip in my life, but if I were to have it taken from me, it would be very, very ugly, Jim. So I feel your pain. I feel your pain, and I wish you the best in Salt Lake City and on your journey home. You're on the rest of this trip, right?
Yes, so we go back to California. So no, West Coast to Mountain Time with daylight savings squeezed in between has not messed me up.
Oh.
And then Sacramento, Dante DiVincenzo revenge game, and then to Minnesota, you know, and Anthony Edwards and Carl Anthony Towns. So yeah, it's interesting end to this trip.
Yeah, I would love to see the Minnesota Timberwolves lock up a spot there in the postseason. I think they're a very fun team, and be curious to see them in action here again in a few days. All right, Jim, that is all we have. We will be back with you again next week. I think there's some vacation stuff in there, but you probably expect to see us again in some capacity next week. And Jim, enjoy the West Coast, wherever your travels will take you, and we will chat with you again soon.
Speak then.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, or 97.3 The Game on Monday night. Thanks for listening, everybody. The Point Forward Podcast, produced by yours truly. I'm J.R. Radcliffe, Jim Ozarski. You can find either one of us on Twitter. I'm at J.R. Radcliffe. He's at Jim Ozarski. Very, very simple stuff. And let us know what you think. Feel free to suggest. Love the suggestions that we've gotten for One Quick Buck. And feel free to pass those along. We are happy to oblige where we can. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will chat with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.